You know, I've been wearing these glasses since I was about 11. And without them, I can't see a thing. And now that I'm approaching my 50th year, I can't even see things close up anymore either. But, you know, sometimes I like to take off my glasses, and especially at night, because tiny points of light become really big, and it's pretty. And when I look out on the world without my glasses, I can't see any of the details. And so I have to pay attention to the whole big picture. I can't see any of the things that distinguish one thing from another. And so I can, ironically, see more. It's easy to lose sight of ourselves, isn't it? It's easy to lose sight of who we are, who we are meant to be, what we're supposed to do in the world. The world is so full of those monkeyish things, monkeyish dress, screams and drumbeats. They obscure our view and we can no longer see the wide landscape. When we find ourselves sometimes in the fog and peering through a mist, what is it that will give us clear vision? Is it faith? Yes. Is it hope? Yes. Is it love? Certainly. Especially love. And especially that facet of love known as agape. Now, talking about love using the English language is very frustrating. It's frustrating because that one word constrains our conversations, because popular culture has taken that one word and pounded it into submission so that now all it means is this task of finding an ideal mate. That's what love is all about today. This flattened image of love has limited our imaginations at a time when we need an expanded view of love. English only has one word for love. Greek, on the other hand, has four. Affection, storge. Friendship, philia. Romance, eros. And charity, agape. Affection, friendship, romance, agape. In 1960, C.S. Lewis wrote this book, The Four Loves. This is my copy, and I bought this when I was 18 years old. Back then, I was in love with my piano teacher's son. I bought it because my copy of 17 Magazine somehow couldn't give me the advice I was looking for. And so I've had it all along. Then I could only barely understand a fraction of it, and today I am still learning from this book. I imagine that later on in my retirement, when I'm culling my library, this is one of the books that I'll hold on to. Last week, I threw you into the deep end of love. If love is a wide open sea, then I threw you in to, you know, 20 feet. And I know that it was hard for you because I started with agape. I started with the hardest kind of love. And so today I want to pull you out of the water, set you on shore, and walk with you through the shallow end and then going a little deeper and deeper and deeper. So you'll forgive me for throwing you into the water, but, you know, that's the way my dad taught me how to swim. We start with affection. We start at home, with family, because this is where most of us first encountered love, the affection for the people and for the pets and the toys and the treasures that filled our houses. This is definitely the shallow end of the sea, the shallow end of the water, because affection doesn't require very much. All it requires is some familiarity. So here is the baby reaching up for her squeaky bunny toy hanging over the crib. And here's a child running into her father's open arms. Here's a mother's willingness to work overtime so that she can put a little more money into the college fund. Under the kitchen table, there's the family dog thumping her tail on a well-worn rug. And there's a bathrobe hanging on the doorknob of the bathroom. A dog-eared book sits on the coffee table that once belonged to great-grandmother. The family home is full of things that we have great affection and love for. Now, if we walk a little deeper into the water, we encounter love as friendship. Moving away from the family home, as a lot of us did, we seek out people who share common interests and people who see life the way we do, people who share similar truths. There is affection here. We call it brotherly love or sisterhood. Beyond affection, there's also a sense of duty and obligation. There's a sense of wanting to serve one another. I feel this way about my ministerial colleagues. There are, 1,800 UU ministers in the country. I definitely don't know all of them. I don't feel any affection towards some of them that I don't know. But we do all share this one ministry and this one life together, and so I feel a sense of obligation and duty. And we have an unwritten code among us that when one calls upon another and asks for a favor, we always say yes whenever we can. The third love, going a little bit deeper into the water, is really the only love that popular culture seems to know anything about, and that's the love of Valentine's Day and flowers and frilly hearts. Falling in love, being in love, it's what the reality shows are all about, right? Like The Bachelor, it's all about love and kissing under a waterfall. In Bali, it's sexual desire. This is love as eros. Of course, behind all the frilly hearts, there is also a deep sacrificial love found in committed relationships. And that has been proven again and again. And it's evident right here in this room. You know, for most of C.S. Lewis's relatively short life, he died when he was 64, he was a bachelor. And so the love he knew was family love, affection, and he had great, great friends, deep, deep friendships. But he didn't know romantic love until the end of his life, when he met and married the poet Helen Joy Davidman. He married her with the full knowledge that she was dying of bone cancer. They had 3 years together before she died. And yet he was willing. He was willing to put his heart out into the world. He was willing to endure the pain for the reward of love. So affection, friendship, romance. These are what Lewis calls natural loves. They just happen, right? Affection, friendship, romance, they happen organically, growing in the garden, kind of like in full summer. You can't stop things from growing, especially in Virginia. They grow spontaneously from seed, nurtured by the sun and the rain and the soil. But just like in the garden in the heat of summer, they can grow out of control, and they can be overtaken by weeds. These flowers grow abundantly when love is based on our desire to give, right? These flowers grow abundantly and in healthy ways when love is based on our desire to give. But the weeds will take over when love becomes more about our need rather than our giving. Affection's weeds come out when our need to be needed only serves one need, ours. You know what that's like? Need to be needed. I need to be needed. I need to be important. I need people to pay attention to me. Those are the weeds of affection. Lewis tells a story about Dr. Quartz. No university, he writes, boasted a more effective or devoted teacher. He spent the whole of himself on his pupils. He was the object of much well-merited hero worship. Naturally and delightfully, his students visited him at his house, even after the tutorial relationship ended. They would go to his house every evening and had famous discussions. But the curious thing is that this never lasted. Sooner or later, it might be within a few months or a few weeks, came the fatal evening when the student knocked on the door and they were told that the doctor was out. After that, he would always be out. The students were banished from him forever. And this was because at their last meeting, inevitably, the student had asserted himself or herself, asserted his independence and supported his own view. And faced with that very independence, which he had labored to produce and which was his duty to produce, Dr. Quartz could not bear it. And what about the weeds that we find in the area of sex and romance? Are there any? Yeah. They are all over the place. And knowing how much damage that we can do to each other in this area, the Buddhists name one of the five precepts or moral vows for their lay people. They name it abstaining from sexual misconduct. Now, what is sexual misconduct in the eyes of a Buddhist? Well, they don't actually list all of those things. What they have, rather, is a practice of seeing themselves as clearly as possible, a practice of asking themselves honest questions. Am I doing this as an act of true love? Am I doing this as a selfless act of compassion? Or am I acting out of my own fears, my own needs, my own anxieties? And then the weeds of friendship. The weeds of friendship come out when those bonds of friendship become so close that they become closed. It becomes a click. Now, I know that a lot of you come to WUU seeking friendship, and a lot of you have found great friends here at WUU. But you know, I told you last month that at our annual meeting that we welcomed 34 new members into our congregation. And I have to tell you that some of them are having a hard time breaking into some of these circles. You all have become such good friends that it's hard for new folks to break in. Love. Love is supposed to open us up, not close us down. So affection, friendship, and romance, these are the flowers and fruit of the mysterious human capacity to love. And they can grow out of control, they can be overtaken by weeds, if the need to be loved is greater than our desire to love. They have a shadow side. And that's why we need that fourth aspect of love, the fourth aspect of love being agape, charity. This is the aspect of love that just orders the other three. This is where love reaches its fullest expression. Agape is the deepest form of love. It is loving without any expectation of getting anything back. It is complete unselfishness and unconditional love. It's the capacity and the power to see the other clearly, to see ourselves clearly, without bias, without judgment, without ego, without fear. And without those things, we are able to see the essential worth and dignity of every being. Paul's first letter to the Corinthians is so often used in weddings that we forget that he's not talking to a bunch of lovers. We forget that he's not talking about love in that way. When he says love is patient, love is kind, he's not talking about romantic love. He's talking about agape, love that extends beyond the closed circles of affection and friendship and marriage. And he's talking not to a bunch of lovers, but he's talking to a community of people that's trying to live by some higher standards. He's talking to a religious community that's trying to get its feet, trying to remind them of their lofty ideals, just as we are trying to do here on Sunday mornings and on Wednesday afternoons in the book group discussion that's just starting, and at the Saturday night band rehearsals and Friday night movie potlucks, during Sunday morning youth group and Monday morning art group. In all of these areas, we are remembering how to love because we're human beings and we keep forgetting, don't we? We keep forgetting how to love. Here we are reminded that we're not just a gathering of like-minded people who enjoy hanging out with each other. We are a community that strives to keep agape at the center of all of our interactions. We are a religious institution, and as a religious institution, we are practicing moving the world to greater love. And then as individuals, we practice moving ourselves to greater love, even when that practice breaks our hearts. And it will. It will. To love is to be vulnerable, Lewis writes. Love anything, and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. Now, if you want to make sure that you will keep it intact, then you must love no one and nothing, not even an animal. Wrap it up carefully around hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all tanglements. Lock it up safe in a coffin or a casket of your selfishness. But in that casket, remember that though it is safe and dark and motionless and airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. Love is to be vulnerable. Every day, the world clouds our eyes with nonsense, distracts our vision with monkeyish dress, fools us with its illusions. Every day, the shadows of the world creep in with its threats of scarcity and danger. And so what will hold us in this foggy haze? What will lead us to clarity? Faith? Yes. Hope? Certainly. Love? Definitely. And the greatest of these is love. May it be so. Amen.